This podcast is brought to you by Harvest Bible College. Find out about their range of nationally accredited courses available online, on campus, and even through your iPod at harvest.edu.au. Vet fee help is available for selected courses. Get trained for ministry by Harvest Bible College.
Tonight we're talking about the issue of youth violence. Maybe you've got some thoughts or comments or question. Pick up the phone, give me a call, 1-385-1314. You can text message 0413096509 or flick me an email, questions@talkinglife.com. Mubarak, from your research, what would be your recommendation for parents who are listening tonight in regards to, you know, kids and internet usage and particularly internet gaming?
Based on my research and also as a parent myself, I will certainly allocate some specific times to spend with my young people, young children, and I would like to definitely open up the conversation as to, you know, what has been their experience in recent months and years and weeks. What are they doing on the online, and what has been the type of game that they are playing? Because, you know, for the young people, it is another game. All right, for them, they don't know the impact of it. So, as a parent, you know, it's very important to just keep an eye on what kind of a game you are playing, and how many people are with you, who are all playing, what kind of a game it is, and what involved in the game. All right, because as I mentioned, you know, there are many commercial interests which are there to manipulate the you know, the emotions of young people. So please, as a family, spend little time and show the curiosity, and if there is any need, probably you need to talk to them. And if you see there is any problems, such as any emotional any emotional problems, then certainly seek help. That's very important.
Mubarak, you know, the internet has been for the last few years where there's been always the caution about pornography and young people, but I'm hearing that there's actually much broader than that, that parents need to be mindful that, oh, they're just playing a game, but actually we need to be careful about how much of the game, what sort of game, and what impact it's having on them.
Yes, certainly. Particularly when we talk about the games, I think, you know, we tend to think that, oh, I can't understand the game, or, you know, it's, you know, too much for me because, you know, technologically I'm not that educated, etc. But hang on, it is not the case. It's not, we are talking about these games which are not that technologically savvy. I mean, they are all nothing but video games, and, you know, very simple few questions can certainly help us to understand what kind of a game it is. Mainly, what are the rewards that are promoted in this game? If there is a point system, what point, what's the point means, and what the kids have to do to gain those points, and after a particular point, what kind of a reward is given there, etc. That means we need to go into the details of it. Look, you know, who is there, who is playing, what roles, what's the characters doing there, and you know, and also various other little details. You know, as a curious parent, if we can get to know, it's good for us and good for them too.
Mubarak, in the days of online gaming, is the danger any more significant where you're actually playing against a person who is being controlled by another person rather than a computer? Does that make any difference at all to the desensitization, or is it, or does it just make the experience more vivid? Or
Sorry, your line is not clear, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you get the gist of the question?
No, I couldn't get the question because it's cutting, you know, cutting in between.
Okay, just go with it again, Peter.
I was just asking, Mubarak, is there any difference in the days of online gaming? Does it make any difference that kids are often playing with other people rather than computer-generated characters? Is there any difference in terms of the desensitization because you're actually playing sometimes against somebody who's a real person?
Yes, certainly, because now recently the most popular ones are you know, this all 24/7 games which are played by different people from all over the world, and there are social groups forming around these games. And obviously, these games have more sort of social networking also involved there. So when we talk about social networking, then obviously the bullying can happen more often, more frequently. That means one group playing against another group. So that when the group psychology happens, obviously the aggression can be more. It's a shared aggression. And then if it is showed towards another group, there also it's not one individual, but it's a group. So, you know, the mob psychology takes over. And there are many studies which have indicated that, you know, when compared to the simple video games where, you know, only one character and the person who is there as a third person, the person is not involved directly there. But whereas in these computer games, you know, it's a much wider social impact can happen on the young people.
Steve, you're doing lots of nodding there.
Well, look, I'm just agreeing with everything Mubarak's saying about the that mob psychology.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite pervasive, whether it's in a video game or whether it's, as we've talked about, looking at something on a mobile phone, where you become part of the mob, but you are also removed from the object or the person who is being attacked. There's a sense that you're not involved.
Mm. Mubarak, we've come a long way from Space Invaders, I guess.
And oh, yeah, very, very long distance.
And I was actually, as you were talking, I was thinking that in our sexuality program we do in schools is that we highlight to kids that Lara Croft was voted as one of the sexiest women on Earth.
Mm.
And I say to students, she's not real. She's computer-generated animation.
And, yes, it is.
And you know, that's the whole thing, is that it's like now this has somehow become part of reality when, you know, effectively she's a cartoon, she's an animation.
Mm.
Yes, it is, yes. But, you know, because of the intense involvement, and many of the times the person who is playing these games have to take over and they become that character. So, you know, that means the sensitivity, the minute difference between the real person and a artificially made character gets merged. So the self, and also, you know, in various social networking sites, you know, you can become avatars. For example, in Yahoo, you can design your own avatar, and then you can post it on online day. And whoever is interacting, that person will be interacting with the avatar. That means the person who has created this avatar is avatar, you know. So it's a very kind of very intensely, modifying or creating a persona around the person and, adding more and more character to this.
So in effect, in some situations, we could actually see some acts of violence where maybe, you know, it's actually related to a role that I play out or an avatar that I play out, and not really me.
Exactly, that's correct.
Steve, what's your thoughts on that?
Yes, because you've merged with the person, so you're the character, and so the character is actually committing the offence, not yourself.
Mm. Talking Life, we're talking about youth violence, and maybe you've got a question or a comment, 1-300-85-13-14, or text message 041-309-6509, or questions at talkinglife.com. We're going to talk with Andrew. Hello, Andrew.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
What would you like to share?
Yeah, I just had an experience, and I'm 26 myself, and I guess I've always been a bit of a fan of video games. I think my generation has sort of grown up, I guess some of them coming out of the womb surgically attached to video devices. But there was a game that I played heavily at one point a few years ago as an adult, and basically the point of the game was you were driving a truck and you took loads from city to city. And road rules essentially in the game were optional. You'd only sort of get penalised if you're actually seen by the cops. And I actually found that about a week after I started playing this heavily that I actually had to catch myself from driving through some red lights when I was in the car. And that experience has always stuck with me because the fact that I was an adult and this has happened. And it made me think, well, what about situations where, you know, a younger person, and particularly what you guys are talking about tonight with the violence too, is that, you know, I guess when you're in a computer game, it's not it's not, I guess it's not reality. And, you know, if you stuff up or you don't quite get something, you can always, you know, restart.
Mm.
And like, I mean, I played flight sim as well, and people ask me, you know, oh, geez, do you want to, like, oh, do you want to become a pilot? I'm like, no, because if you're a pilot, then you have 300 real people on your plane. In flight sim, if you crash, you can just go restart and try again. You know, and I think is probably that element too is perhaps somebody who isn't mature or developed. When you have particularly violence in a video game, I guess it doesn't, it blurs the line between reality and I guess the virtual world. Mm. And I think maybe younger people may not be able to make that distinction.
Mm. Yes, I think...
Did you sort of see what I'm saying? I don't know whether I put myself clearly enough. But.
Very clear, Andrew. I mean, I guess one of the questions to ask is, does media violence make someone more aggressive than they would have otherwise been? Now, you were an adult and could reflect on that. Now, let's just say that you're a 15-year-old male who has got a past history of violence anyway, who comes from, a very difficult background, may have been abused, may have already been engaged in the youth justice system, is prone to impulsive acts, and you drink a bit of alcohol just on top of that. Now, if you then start using or engaging in, say, a similar video game than you did, as you did, then you are probably more likely to be highly aroused anyway. Once you start playing the game, that level of arousal will increase further and will be more likely to then precipitate you to engage in some type of event which leads potentially to a catastrophe. Mm. So it's whether the way I like to conceptualize it, or a way, is, does the game make you more aggressive than you would have otherwise been? And so it's not just the game in itself, but it's a lot of other risk factors. And if you've got enough risk factors plus the game, that is potentially enough to tip you over the edge.
Mm. Mubarak,
I see what you're saying. So it's a combined... It's sort of like the story of who sank the boat. It might be a little mouse, but it combined with everything else, it just tips them over.
Yeah, and I mean, let's just use, a somewhat extreme example in your case. You know, you found that you were potentially about to go through red lights. Just say you had a fight with someone before, you were already angry and you just drunk a little bit of, you drunk a few beers. And then you find that you yourself were able to stop going through the red light, but at that level of arousal, thinking about the game may have been enough for you to go through the red light, and that could lead to a catastrophe.
Okay.
Hang on there, Andrew. Mubarak, did you get most of Andrew's comment?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences, Andrew. It's a wonderful experience that you are sharing, particularly when we talk about, distinctions and the level of maturity. The recent research evidences indicate that, irrespective of age, almost all of us seems to be having this trouble in finding the distinctions between the reality and the game. In fact, when we talk about the age groups, the middle-aged people who are, prone to use these internet games and also video games seem to be even violating the rules. Why? Because now it seems that emotional arousal doesn't know the age. We all are discussing, it depends on the environment it happens. Alcohol is definitely a plus point. In addition to that, even a love. If you love somebody, that's also an intense emotion. All right? So the moment an individual is intensely aroused by any emotion, any added emotion can create a very mixture of very strange emotion.
Mm.
So young people are not the only ones who are prone to it. Studies are indicating that it's a brain activity. Everybody is prone to do that.
Mm. Hey, Andrew, thanks for ringing and sharing, because it actually raises that whole issue that we talked about, desensitization. And
I find that too. I mean, I guess you do find that, like, I mean, there's a game that I play where it's sort of a battle. It was called Battlefield 1942, and it's based on some of the battles in World War II. And it does, I think it does desensitise you, sort of. It comes from, you know, I guess it's, in some ways it's an escape. You know, if you dwell on the fact that, hey, I'm actually killing another human being, it would take all the enjoyment out of the game. But it's like, oh, I've got to, you know, try and get the flags and, you know, kill as many of the enemy and all that to get points, I guess. And I think that desensitisation, especially when you're particularly playing a game like that, it would be very much a factor.
Yeah, I remember working with a depressed young man who, fortunately enough, had enough insight because he said, life is not like a video game where I can just reset it and start it again. And because he said, if I would, I'd just start all over again. And I think the desensitisation is, like you said, you know, your own example was that you're prepared to actually engage in some lawlessness in pressing the boundaries because that's what you did in the game. You go, hang on a minute, that's not reality. I've got to stop.
Yeah, it just became, I guess, because I was playing the game a lot in my spare time at that point, it got to the point where that was sort of, I guess I was used to doing that.
Mm.
And so when I got into the car, I guess it didn't automatically click back. It's not like a sort of, it's not like you automatically switch everything between modes, I guess.
Yep.
And it actually really surprised me because I never really noticed anything as, I guess, blatant as that happening before. And the fact that I was coming up to a red light and my mind was off in La La Land and suddenly I realised, hang on a sec, I've got to stop at this.
Mm.
You know, it just really, really actually shook me.
Yeah.
And even thinking about it now, it kind of, you know, you're thinking, wow, you know. I mean, luckily it was something, I guess you could say, as simple as that. I mean, you put a lot more of these complex issues that you guys are talking about, more serious. I guess, I mean, I suppose running a red light can be serious, but I mean,
could have very serious consequences.
Yeah. I guess when you can put that into a situation where perhaps, like that unfortunate incident in Brisbane recently, where the boy went into the schoolyard with a knife and actually killed somebody.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I guess it's one step from going through a red light to doing something like that. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's a bit of a spin-out.
Yeah, it is.
Really.
Hey, Andrew, thanks for ringing and sharing with us tonight. Appreciate that.
No, that's all right. It's great. It's great to have these discussions. It's really good.
Thanks, mate. Talking Life on Families Number One. I'm Peter Janetsky, and we're talking about understanding youth violence. And maybe you've got a question or a comment or a story, 1-300-85-1314, or you can text message 0413096509, or you can email questions at talkinglife.com. Now, we're actually reintroducing the Talking Life three-part quiz. And what that is that there are three parts to the quiz. You need to get the answer to all three, and then you can actually win a prize. So we'll kick that off tonight, and we'll just see if that'll actually
Talking
run.
Talking Life's three-part quiz.
So in the way it works, three questions. You need to have the answers to all three. This is part number one, and this is to honour the Winter Olympics, which will finish tomorrow. Part number one, Dale Begg-Smith was the first Aussie to win a medal in these games. He won silver in which event? Dale Begg-Smith was the first Aussie to win a medal in these Winter Olympics. He won silver in which event? That's part number one. Keep listening for part number two and three. Talking Life, you can call me 1-300-85-1314. Mubarak, you there?
Yes, I am there, Peter. Yes.
I just wanted to check because we were originally going to have a short interview with you and you've stayed with us for an hour, so I just wanted to make sure that you're fine with that. And
yeah, I'm fine with that. Thank you. It's a pleasure. Yes.
Did you want to stay on or do you want to wrap up?
It's up to you, Peter.
Oh, well, I'm happy to have you as part of the conversation. We're enjoying your contribution.
Thank you very much for that. Yes. If I can be some help, it's a pleasure.
Well, that'd be great because the thing I want to come back to Steve for a moment in that the Andrew talked about, you know, the stuff that was going for him and you talked about arousal. And then I was thinking about, you know, if I'm really honest, there are times when, you know, I've been angry. Everybody gets angry. And anger is one of those things that actually can have, in a strange way, a real buzz to it.
Hmm.
And then anger can be fed. And I guess coming back to youth violence thing is that you know, when can I actually control that, restrain that, and manage that? And I'm wondering about, is that a difficulty for young people anyway?
Well, I think it is a difficulty for all young people. And I think if you look at the risk factors, which you have to ask, what things actually are more likely to make people violent? What things increase the risk of a young person being violent? And we know that there are, you know, there are factors. We know that alcohol use, because that disinhibits you. So if you're already prone to become angry, drinking alcohol is going to disinhibit you and increase your likelihood of being violent. We know that young people who come from backgrounds characterized by abuse and neglect are more likely to be violent. And one of the reasons is because they've probably been hyper-aroused for a long period of time because of the abuse and neglect. We know that young people who are unemployed and come from backgrounds characterized by poverty and poor parenting. While, of course, that doesn't mean that all those young people are going to be violent, those are significant risk factors which increase the likelihood of you becoming violent. And once again, it is probably because in those situations, these people have either not been taught or don't know how to manage those type of emotions which are traditionally linked with you acting out.
1-300-85-13-14 is the number to call. We're talking about youth violence. Or you can text message 0413096509 or questions at talkinglife.com. Pete, I know that in some of your counselling that you've worked with some young fellas, some kids who, you know, I guess are frustrated, angry, anxious, and we've talked about anxiety lots over the years. How does that fit with that thing around, you know, like what Steve's saying, risk factors, but then actually learning the skills?
It's difficult because, you know, sometimes when you see these kids, you can see that there's a propensity for them to act out. I mean, it's interesting, I guess, just to take a slightly different spin on things. One of the things that we know about some kids who have a particular types of dispositions who are also anxious, you know, anxiety and anger have adrenaline in common. And sometimes kids who are quiet and anxious, who feel a bit disenfranchised, I guess, have a propensity to build up anger and frustration. And it often, you know, it often comes out quite innocuously most of the time at home. You'll often see kids who are like this, who are terrific everywhere else, but at home they slam doors and hit walls and stuff like that. But there are other kids who you know, maybe don't have access to the right sort of availability of being able to talk to somebody or somebody realising what's going on, who can sometimes, you know, really store up some significant anger and don't really have a good outlet for it. And that's something that I often see and deal with, and that's a good one to get on top of. It's really important for people to recognise those kids and to be able to find ways that they can connect with people and talk things through.
Both of you guys are aware, you know, I talk quite openly about my generalised anxiety. Steve, I wanted to ask if this was a common thing, because as a young person and even as an adult, I found that I actually had this free-floating anger thing that I think was directly related to the anxiety, because once I actually got, once I needed medication and I started and I got stabilised medication, I actually found that actually dissipated. It was just not there. And there were times where it wasn't that I couldn't control it, I had to control it, but there was just this free-floating thing that actually sometimes I found quite scary. Because I thought, you know, truth, I could be a psychopath.
But the interesting thing is that you found that scary. I think you also happen to be male. I think if you look at the stats, there's actually a negative association between violence and anxiety in girls. Mm-hmm. So if you're the more anxious you are, the less you're likely to be violent. In guys, it's not quite that clear cut, because we know being male, with all the testosterone that's involved, that in itself is a significant risk factor for violence. So it probably swamps the anxiety. The other way of looking at it is that if you engage in a lot of antisocial behaviours, that that probably means that your life sucks anyway, and so you're more likely to be anxious and depressed. But the opposite is not true. If you're anxious and depressed, you're not more likely to be antisocial. Mm-hmm. So it's often that, and this is only statistics. I mean, there's always going to be someone who...
Who's the exception.
Who's the exception. Mm-hmm. But it would seem that the antisocial behaviour fuels the anxiety or the depression rather than the other way around. Mm-hmm. However, the differences in impulsivity and hyperactivity and inattention in that, or ADHD, if you want to coin a term, it would seem that ADHD-related behaviour fuels violence. Okay, so young people who are very, and once again, it's broad statistics, but young people who are hyperactive, impulsive, are more likely then to engage in violent behaviour.
And I'm wondering then if that's, you know, you use the word antisocial and impulsive, that if I'm actually antisocial, struggling with peers and stuff, that maybe then we'd come back to Mubarak, is that, you know, the cyberspace is an easy place to actually find connection, meaning, and to express some of that, but then that becomes a volatile combination.
Absolutely. Even more importantly, also, if you have difficulty engaging with your peers anyway.
What are you thinking, Mubarak?
Yes. In terms of Steve's point on anxiety, I totally agree with him. And also, I would like to add another layer to this. When we talk about anxiety, we are also talking about role models in the young person's lives. Because, you know, that's the most tender age where, you know, young people are still in the process of, you know, adopting some sort of a role model, and how the role models are dealing with the anxiety, how the anxiety is expressed, and how the whole intense emotions of, you know, anxiety, and also along with that comes, you know, the sense of securing oneself, you know, the curious way of securing oneself. It all comes as a combination and package. Now, when we talk about cyberspace, obviously, cyberspace provides many role models these days. You know, now especially with the facilities such as Facebook and Twitter. Now, the Facebook and Twitter is nothing but a platform where people share their emotions, share their anxiety, share their anger. I mean, people don't simply talk, "Hi, how are you?" That's only the opening statement. But after that, they are sharing their intense, you know, feelings for the day. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is feeling very anxious or very frustrated, very unhappy, that's the person who is having the tendency to log on to that website on the day, so that at least, you know, that person has an opportunity to share those anxieties with others. Now, to what extent this can be, you know, circulated among a group of people, my guess is quite natural. Because if somebody is unhappy, obviously that same emotion, the same anxiety is circulated among the group of people, and different personalities will react to this, you know, arousal level differently.
Mm. Talking Life, I'm Peter Janetsky, and this is Families Number 1965, and we're talking about the issue of youth violence, and my guests are Dr. Stephen Stathis, psychologist Peter Brown, and Dr. Mubarak Ali from Flinders University. And maybe you've got a question or a comment. The number to call is 1-385-1314. You can text message also 0413096509, or flick me an email, questions@talkinglife.com. We're going to take a word from our sponsors and be back with more talk in a moment. So stick around, more to come.
This podcast was brought to you by Harvest Bible College, with over 25 years' experience of training leaders for the local church. Harvest is a name you can trust. Visit their website at harvest.edu.au, or check out one of their campuses at Mount Gravatt, Springfield, or on the Gold Coast. Vet fee help is available for selected courses. Choose Harvest.